Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. Have you heard the city of Albuquerque on KUNM advertising that they're hiring right now? Or maybe you've seen the city of Santa Fe on social media touting their rapid hiring event that's coming up this weekend? The state is also in on the rush to lure in new talent. We'll hear more about these efforts through the hour, but all these job fairs make us wonder if city and state bureaucracies can keep government running and serving citizens if they're so understaffed. We'll dig into that and other questions about services and hiring today with the Legislative Finance Committee, the State Personnel Office, the Director of the Local Government Employees Union, and in the second half of the hour, we'll hear from the City of Albuquerque and the Mayor of Santa Fe about how they're out there competing for workers. We want to hear from you also. Have you considered a job in the public sector? Why or why not? Have you run into delays because the government doesn't have the staff to move like they used to? Do you think it's time we pay higher wages to government workers to make those empty jobs more attractive? Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 505-277-5866. My first guest is John Courtney. He's the Deputy Director for Program Evaluators at the Legislative Finance Committee. Thanks for joining us this morning, John.
Thanks for having me, Kaveh. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. First, I'd like to make sure listeners know what the LFC does. Can you just briefly tell us about the functions of the office?
Absolutely. So the LFC is it's a joint interim budget committee with a nonpartisan staff of about 40. One side of our office helps to create a comprehensive budget recommendation separate from the governor's own recommendation, while the other side is doing program evaluation on key policy questions. That's the side of the office that I lead. Each side of the office's work informs the other side. We also have a couple of economists on staff who participate in a state consensus revenue group, and that group helps us to figure out how much money we'll have going forward, informed by GRT revenue, oil and gas prices and forecasts, among other key metrics. Process-wise, agencies submit budget requests, and based on those requests and other information, like our program evaluations, the LFC and the executive propose that comprehensive state budget to the full legislature. We're one of only a handful of states that use that process. And those recommendations, they both come out in January, and they're the starting point for the appropriation decisions during the legislative sessions. And many people maybe also see the committee meeting around the state during the interim. This year we met in Ruidoso, Las Cruces, Taos. They try to cover the state, not only to hear statewide issues, but local issues as well from the public and from agencies.
Okay, so you have a pretty good handle on what's going on in the state agencies and budget-wise. Let's start with, the topic of the day and kind of get into maybe the most basic question about what we're thinking about as a labor shortage. What evidence is there for there being a labor shortage right now? Do we actually have a labor shortage?
It's a good question. In November of 21, so just a month ago, Pew reported that 42 states have more job openings than unemployed workers. The nation is nearing full employment, and New Mexico is not far behind. In other words, we're nearing a point where we have more jobs than people to fill them. We just heard a little while ago on the NPR newscast that state claims for unemployment are at their lowest levels since 1969. Now, in that Pew report, New Mexico is one of eight states with more unemployed workers than jobs, but we're close to that full employment benchmark, according to Pew, with 9 workers for every 10 jobs. If you look at state employment, I think we made some progress from 20 to 21. The state vacancy rate came down a bit, but quarter by quarter, it's been creeping back up over about 20%.
Okay, maybe I'll mention I did reach out to Pew to see if they could join us this morning. They were tied up, but they did want to point out that one of the big draws on unemployment in New Mexico is employees at the casinos. The native-run casino employees do count as state workers here, and since those casinos are starting to open up, that may have changed a little bit. I also reviewed some Bureau of Labor Statistics findings for New Mexico and for Santa Fe and Albuquerque that show government work as a percentage of the total employment has decreased some over the past 6 months or so. Why is that?
The government sector has been lagging. That same report that you mentioned from Pew, it seems like they've been those positions have been slower to recover. There's a number of reasons that's possible. I think you mentioned kind of on the kickoff there. You know, there are some questions that I think we need to address. Are you know, government wages adequate to remain competitive with the private sector, with other states? And I think we've got some work to do there.
Okay. Well, there are certainly plenty of jobs available, and there's money already set aside for payrolls. In fact, over the last couple of weeks, state agency heads have been talking to lawmakers at LFC hearings about next year's budget and often asking for more money to hire into new positions. And the response we saw several times was something like, you know, but you already have all these vacant positions and money set aside to fund them. That response seems pretty straightforward. I wonder if there's some nuance there that we should try to understand.
You know, I think that's exactly right as far as what's been happening. The LFC has been hearing agency budget requests for the last few months. And, a number of agencies came in asking for expansions or more positions. There was a refrain from legislative members, basically saying, you know, how are we going to fill new positions if we have, you know, in some cases over 20% vacancy rates at agencies? We saw legislative members really encouraging a number of agencies to go back and take a look at the pay of the employees that they have, of the positions that they have, to see if that needs to be adjusted, and to come back in January when the session gets going and kind of share that analysis. But I'll say we also saw some deep dives from some agencies. You know, Department of Public Safety kind of stands out in my mind, where they've done that analysis, and they've identified a need for better pay for their officers to remain competitive, to keep turnover down. I think that's something that both the executive and the legislative branches are listening to. You know, I think when these budget recommendations come out in January, I think you're going to see a prioritization of not only increased pay across the state, but also some targeted increases for those places that those sectors that we know are in greater need.
Now, John, I wonder if this is something you know. Are a lot of these vacancies just newer positions that haven't been filled yet, or is turnover kind of the more major factor when it comes to the vacancy rate?
You know, I think it's probably a bit of both. I think a lot of the jobs that are open right now are jobs that have been around for a while. You know, if you look at SPO's website today, there are a little over 1,300 job ads, and this, you know, the jobs range from entry level positions all the way to directors of programs. I think you're seeing we were talking about just before, some evidence of that labor shortage and potentially creeping up on that area where we have more jobs to out there than people to fill them, and we know in certain sectors that's absolutely true and has been for quite some time. You know, there's been a well documented and discussed nursing shortage in the state for a number of years. The legislature and the executive had made strides to try to address that. There, in fact, in the special session with some of this federal stimulus money that's under consideration for being spent as we speak, I believe that's been being made a priority by the legislature right now.
Okay, you just mentioned SPO. That's the State Personnel Office, and we do have the director on the show. I'm going to introduce him in just a moment, but I have one more question for you first. Several agency heads have been talking about difficulties in hiring, and wages are a big part of that. We know the private sector has an advantage when it comes to making those kinds of, you know, pay adjustments more quickly, but I'm wondering if there's some kind of mechanism for like a statewide pay survey or the ability to make pay increases beyond small cost of living adjustments.
I think that's probably warranted. You know, there does seem to be some evidence that exists of salary inadequacy across the state government system. I know the State Personnel Board releases an annual report where they identified that, you know, the New Mexico government wage growth hasn't kept pace with inflation. We've done some analysis showing that it hasn't kept pace with average wage growth across the state or the country. I think this is through the system all the way from, again, from those entry-level positions to our higher-level positions in the state. And you know, remaining competitive is one of the things that's going to ensure that we don't have a lot of turnover. It's going to ensure that, you know, government functions as it should. There are some really critical jobs out there in state government that are essential to the functioning of state government. And, you know, we've got to make sure that there are skilled, motivated folks to come in and help us out.
Okay, I feel like this is maybe the perfect time to introduce our next guest. That's Ricky Serna. He's not only the acting secretary for the Department of Workforce Solutions, but he's also acting director of the State Personnel Office. Thanks for coming back to the show, Ricky. We had you on, I don't know, 6 months ago or so.
That's right, Carvey. Good morning. It's good to be here. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Introducing you with your two positions makes me think of another agency head, David Scrace, who also heads two offices, Human Services and the Department of Health. I wonder if this is emblematic of the labor shortage. Is this a permanent shift in state government trying to do more with less?
No, I don't think that it is. I think we're at a unique time. I think you'll see that nationally. A lot of employers talking about, you know, the labor shortage and the million-dollar question, where are the workers, right? And how do we identify not only where they're at, but perhaps what their barriers are to getting back to work, and how do we overcome them? So, you know, at Department of Workforce Solutions, that's the question that we're working on, and we're finding some information to help answer that question. But at State Personnel Office, like most other employers, we're wrangling with a higher than normal vacancy rate. That's gone up by about 3 points over the last 7 or 8 months. So we clearly need to evaluate not only big picture where the labor force is, but what's going to keep us competitive and attractive as they start coming back to work.
Okay, I do kind of have a follow-up along that line, and it's really the question that drove the idea for the show today. I think it's fair to ask if you're able to do all you can for each position, holding two, knowing that the other requires your attention also. Is government functioning properly at current staff levels?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the answer to that is the historical trust that we have in state workers in general, right? I mean, our responsibility is really to understand what the vision is and to get, you know, the workers to do what needs to be done, the boots on the ground to fulfill the mission of this governor. So that's me sending a well-deserved note of recognition to the teams at Department of Workforce Solution, right? The hundreds that answer phone calls, that help claimants, that administer benefits, and the hundreds that actually meet with workers and get them connected with employers, and the same at the State Personnel Office, right? So it's really the teams, it's the staff, it's the employees that make things happen, and they've been doing a great job allowing me to kind of function in this dual capacity.
Okay, no doubt you're great at your job, but I'm kind of also wondering if there are active job postings for one of your positions or one of Dr. Scrace's positions. Certainly you can use some help, right?
Yeah, I think it's always great to have more than less. The governor's office, of course, has said on numerous occasions that they're actively looking for for applicants and good fits for all the vacant governor exempt positions that they have available right now. So they continue to look for, you know, the right people to come and take over some of these roles and help us move forward.
Okay. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls about the large number of job vacancies in government. Tell us if you'd consider working for the city or the state by calling 505-277-5866. We'll be right back.
Support provided by Independent Vehicle Service, specializing in Volvo since 1981, offering professional detailing and recondition services, just because it's good to have an independent dealer alternative. Details at IVSABQ.com. UNM Health is a proud sponsor of KUNM, offering a Level 1 trauma center at UNM Hospital, where emergency care teams use advanced technology to diagnose and stabilize emergencies with speed and care during critical times for New Mexicans.
Composer Osvaldo Golihov wrote a Yiddish lullaby for a film about love and tragedy, and then wrote this haunting set of variations. I'm Fred Child. Join me for a concert in Basel, Switzerland, and the Lullaby in Duena by Osvaldo Golihov on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're talking to John Courtney from the Legislative Finance Committee and Ricky Cerna, who heads the Department of Workforce Solutions and the State Personnel Office. Did you grow up thinking of government work as a ticket to a comfortable life with a pension? Tell us if that idea has changed for you. Give us a call at 505-277-5866 or tweet using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Okay, I have another question for John Courtney from the LFC. The committee recently announced that revenues forecasted for the coming years are actually much higher than what was expected. What would it take to get some of that money into people's pockets through wage increases? Is the LFC recommending something like this?
Good question, Kaveh. You know, our recommendation will be out in January. I think you certainly will see that in the budget. I think you'll see the same from the executive. I think it's certainly a priority. You know, one of the things we have to keep in mind is not to overextend the budget. You know, by the Constitution, we have to have a balanced budget. We can't operate in a deficit. And you know, in years where the state has overextended themselves with budget, you see things that you don't want to see. I started in state government about 14 years ago. And soon after I started, there was a pretty significant recession, and you saw furloughs across state government. So, you know, it's certainly one of the priorities of I know the Finance Committee, as is trying to stabilize that revenue volatility that in many circumstances is highly dependent on oil and gas prices. You know, if you look at state revenue or new money over the last 10 years, it looks a little like a roller coaster. It's feast or famine, and so that's one of the other priorities that I know the members are considering when building the budget.
Okay, so the state revenues are that roller coaster line up and down. I wonder then, is budget kind of more of a flat line? Is this another case of trying to kind of flatten that curve?
You know, I think there are two things there. One, I think we've seen, you know, pretty significant growth in most years. Some cuts in some years, but I know the legislature's tried to keep, you know, budget making as priority making, the most essential parts of government flat in those lean years. So there, you know, that's it's. I think we'll continue to see budget growth, but we're also going to continue to see, measures towards stabilization of revenue. And one of the measures for that is making sure that the state has a healthy reserve. I believe the target this year for the committee has set is around 30%.
Okay, I see we have a caller, George from Albuquerque. George, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'd like to start just by saying I think public service is a vital sector in New Mexico, local and state government, and I applaud everybody that works in the public sector. One of the panelists mentioned that he thought state government was functioning smoothly. The counterpoint to that is I started a small business prior to the pandemic, didn't generate any revenue, and my tax account went dormant. And when I tried to pay some taxes based on some recent revenue I generated, I couldn't. And I ended up speaking to somebody on the phone, and they said it would take 12 weeks to reactivate my tax account. So to me, that doesn't seem like smooth functioning of local government or state government.
Okay.
So anyway, I just wanted to offer that counterpoint, and thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, let's go to Ricky Cerna from the State Personnel Office. I wonder if you have a reaction either to the caller, George, in Albuquerque, or what we just heard from John Courtney at the LFC.
Sure. Yeah, I wanted to respond to John's point about the executive likely coming in with a strong recommendation to address compensation, and that's exactly what's happening, Kaveh. We've actually a few months ago, at the request of Governor Lujan Grisham, began working with our union partners, one of which I think we're going to hear from a little bit, and CWA to really hammer out a compensation recommendation that we think is going to be aggressive and leverage this opportunity, right, given the revenue projections, to do something meaningful. And so the goal, and we've talked about this publicly and presented to legislators, is to bring the minimum rate of pay for state workers to $15 an hour. And at the same time, through this plan, address compaction, right? The idea that we jumble everybody up at a rate of pay that, that can move away from recognizing their experience, their years of service, or, you know, where they sit in an organizational structure. So we're looking forward to finalizing that plan, to sitting with labor and coming to center on how we're going to get aggressive together in January to really move the needle on compensation for state workers.
Okay, and what about that long wait at the Tax and Revenue Department? Is that one of the departments that's suffering especially from understaffing right now?
Well, I think I'd like to drill down further, and I can certainly leave an email address so that I can help the gentleman, you know, specifically. But, you know, we definitely are there's an ongoing process, right, of evaluating the systems and how we better serve New Mexicans. There's no question about that. And it's important for us to hear directly from constituents where, you know, we've stretched things out far longer than it probably needs to take. And if this is one of those instances, and it's yet another opportunity to get better at something.
Okay, I see we have two more callers both wanting to talk about wages. Let's take them both one after the other. Let's start with Ben calling from Santa Fe.
Hi. So my comment is just that as a state worker, I work three jobs here in Santa Fe just to get by. Not only that, my boss and his boss also work three jobs. Our salaries aren't competitive at all compared to federal government. And, you know, I've been here probably longer than I should have been. But, you know, I see people come and go so quick. The average lifespan of a new employee here is like less than 2 years before they figure out that they're not going to be able to get a raise for being good at their job. And so they leave. I mean, we're just not competitive. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear from Bill in Los Lunas. Go ahead, Bill. Okay.
Employees hate the fact that private sectors are into their business. City employees do not like temporary employees. City employees do not like part-time employees. An individual that works three jobs in one day is taking two jobs away from two persons. This private sector has invaded the city employees, the government employees, with part-time jobs. And they hire these people with very low, low wages, and then they charge the city higher wages to employ them. These are private employees doing part-time jobs in government and city jobs.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Thank you. And, you know, we heard a couple good points there. One, I would like to maybe propose to you, Ricky, I understand that you point job seekers through the Department of Workforce Solutions to both public and private sector jobs. What kind of success are you having there with getting employees hired by government rather than going into the private sector?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should ask. I mean, we do a couple of things in particular that do focus on government job placement. One is managing the TANF Works grant for the Human Services Department that essentially allows for us to get referrals from the Human Services Division when New Mexicans come on to SNAP and TANF benefits and they require some real work experience in order to then earn a livable wage on their very own outside of transition benefits. And those programs in particular have historically focused on placing, New Mexicans into government, city, or county jobs. But this next week, for example, and I talked to you a little bit about this, Kaveh, coming into the interview, is Department of Workforce Solutions is focused in on a rapid hire event, much like the city of Santa Fe is doing this weekend. On December 15th, we'll be focused in on a rapid hire event specifically for state agencies so that we can assist, various state agencies with finding good workers and getting them hired very, very quickly. So we're equally focused. We really are about aligning, right, the skill set, the training opportunities, the environment, what's available locally, so that a worker finds an opportunity that makes sense for where they want to be long term.
Okay, and for listeners who are interested in that state-level rapid hiring event, where can they find some more information?
So you can find more information at dws.state.nm.us, ready.nm.org is where we'll also push all that information. And that second website, ready.nm.org, by the way, is that one-stop location if you are looking for work, whether you're unemployed or underemployed, where you can connect directly with a career consultant. If you're an employer, directly with a business consultant who can help you identify a workforce.
Okay, and for listeners, we did just tweet that out. We also have a link at KUNM.org to the Workforce Connections webpage. There are also some city events coming up, and we'll talk about those in just a few minutes. I think now that we're also starting to talk about municipal work, this is a perfect time to introduce another voice to the conversation. We have Connie Durr, the Executive Director for the Local Government Employee Union. That's the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 18. Good morning, Connie. Did I get that right? It's a long title.
Yes, you did. Good morning, Kaveh. Great to be here, and good morning to the esteemed guests you have here.
Well, thank you for being here with us. We've been talking about trouble with employee turnover, among other things, and challenges of staffing. You're here as a representative of public employees, not the government. So what's been missing from the conversation so far?
I think this has been a pretty robust conversation so far. Getting people in the job and staying, those are two extreme challenges. And I speaking from keeping them in the job, and it's been mentioned earlier, is about the pay, about competitive pay, good benefits. And while that is an extremely, extremely important piece, it's so very, very important that where you're working and with whom you're working and that whole environment is good too. You can have folks who are real good workers, but if things just aren't matching up, if, the personality clashes or, chain of command is not, good, and it's that kind of environment, people will leave. So I think we have to do a good, better job of making sure that all of those pieces align. And when we have collective bargaining relationships, that's what we focus on, to make sure that we're working towards the same end of lifting pay, making sure that the workplace, that there are good health and safety coverage. We know that with government here in New Mexico, there's a good retirement security. But there's a lot of other things, like in your contract, that helps to make the workplace a good place to be.
Okay, that I wonder is might be hard to put into words in a contract. So, what are tangible things that you're hearing that public service employees want that they aren't getting? I don't know how you say we want to. Comfortable, happy, pleasant place to work, but what else?
Well, I think one of the main things is that you have a clear voice so that the workers have a voice to raise any kind of issues and concerns they may have. I think one of the main things, as we're talking about, is staffing. And we heard, what the vacancy rate is. And when you look at correctional officers in the Department of Corrections, there's a high vacancy rate. And we know that number can be skewed a little bit if there's positions that are perhaps moved out where you had a 20% vacancy rate, and then that's reduced. Well, actually, we don't need that many. Then it looks like it's only 10%, so it doesn't sound that bad. But there are a lot of positions where they The workforce is understaffed. Children, youth, and families, for example, they need a lot of investigators. So the investigators that are there have to turn out work rapidly. So they have, in one day, they've got to close maybe five cases. And when you have that kind of high, stressful work rate, things are going to happen. You're going to forget things, or things are not going to be completed as they should be, and that can be dangerous. So staffing is very important, whether a correctional facility, whether Department of Transportation, Human Services, to make sure that the SNAP benefits and TANF benefits are being moved out. And the rate that I think the caller, George, had said about tax and rev is that there's enough staff to process and get the work done.
Okay, let's go back to Ricky Cerna at the State Personnel Office. I wonder if there are, you know, we've heard about several of the agencies. Are there certain types of jobs that are just hard to keep staffed?
Yeah, great question. We've actually been having a lot of conversations in particular about positions within business and finance, positions within human resources. And then there are those historical challenges, right? Like corrections officers, where you know the job is you know is about your high stress position. So, but lately more than ever, budget, finance, and human resources positions, and that of course aligns with what larger companies outside of New Mexico have been able to offer by way of employment opportunities through remote work. So it presents right an increased competitive space that we didn't see before. And very quickly, Carver, I did want to address one thing to Connie's point, and she's absolutely right, and it talks a little bit about what John said earlier. You know, when you have agencies that go to the legislature and say, hey, listen, my vacancy rate is 18% and we need these new positions, part of this is a workload issue. You know, if you have 20 people doing the work of 30 people and they're not going to keep doing that work because it's too much work for 20 people, then you realize I need 30 people to do this work. And so you present an image that suggests fill those 20 first and you'll get this other 10, but it's going to be hard to keep those 20 people working if you continue to distribute to them, you know, work for 30. So compensation and distribution of workload is really key. And those are some of the tangible items that our union partners keep us on our toes about.
Okay, this might be a good time to relay an anecdote I heard from my news director, Megan Kamrick, yesterday after an interview she did with John Romero from the state engineer's office. The state engineer, John D'Antonio, told lawmakers recently he's leaving his post and cited a lack of resources. Romero is the director of the Water Resources Allocation Program in his office. He said they have about 69 vacant positions and mostly can't fill them because of budget. This is delaying things like water rights transfers and will likely delay licensing for cannabis producers. That was the subject Megan was interviewing about. But Romero also said it's challenging to retain people because you learn water rights on the job, and that can take 6 months or a year, and then those people are valuable and they can get poached by private industry or municipalities that might pay more than the state. Connie, how do we keep people in public service? And I'll follow up with the others on this too.
How do we keep them in public service? That's, you know, as we talked about, the pay is, the hours. Behavioral Health Institute up in the city of Las Vegas, state facility, very difficult work. And they have had just a chronic shortage of staff just doing the work, taking care of those in the facility. So they, you know, we've got a lot of folks that have stayed there for a significant period of time because it's also not, you know, it's not like it's in the epicenter of a huge city. They like the work they do. They believe in the work that they're doing, but the pay, and then when they're doing having mandatory overtime, and it's every single week, and you end up working essentially, one of the other callers talked about, you know, 2-3 jobs. Even in a state of New Mexico job where they may end up having to work their job plus half a job in the position that they're already holding because there aren't enough staff. It's hard to keep folks working there. People, as I said when I first started, that employees, when they love their job, they love their work environment, sometimes it's like, okay, you know, pay may not be the absolute best, but when all of these things come together, people will stay in their job. When they're part of the mission, when they even see that there's a career pattern. I think with the state of New Mexico, what's terrific is that there are a lot of job opportunities. There are a lot of possibilities to transfer over to different agencies. And I think in some private sector positions, it's pretty linear, you know, just this one job. But with the state, you can move from department to department if something, you know, appeals to you and you're able to kind of, you know, set your own path. But staying in state government, you know, compensation is significant. Again, the benefits are very good with the state government.
Okay. We are listening. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We are talking about, well, mostly it's been state employment so far. In a moment, we're going to transition to hear from the cities. Santa Fe Mayor Alan Weber will join us along with Melanie Lopez from Albuquerque's HR department. We'll be right back in just a minute. Stay right there.
Native Americans continue to suffer serious brain injuries far more than the general population. But there are advancements in both prevention and treatment that offer promise for closing the gap. We'll find out more about brain injuries on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Holidays are coming, and you might be thinking about giving a gift to KUNM. How about that old car or truck that doesn't run? It may be junk to you, but it's a great gift for KUNM. In fact, vehicle donations pay almost 10% of our bill. That's worthwhile. It's easy to give. No need for wrapping paper or a bow. Just a phone and this number, 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're talking about government and whether it works for us when there are so many vacant positions. Call 505-277-5866 and tell us why you have or haven't encouraged your friends or family to apply for government work. I would like to go ahead and introduce our next guest right now. We are grateful to be able to have Santa Fe Mayor Alan Weber on the phone. Thank you for taking a little time for us this morning, Mayor Weber.
Happy to be with you, and thanks for a very good discussion this morning. Very, very well done. Great guests, great discussion.
Okay, well, we've mostly talked about state employees so far this morning. Mayor Weber, the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows government employment in Santa Fe down more than 5% in the last 6 months or so. I'm wondering where Santa Fe is feeling that labor crunch right now.
Well, it's across the board. The city of Santa Fe, before COVID hit, had roughly 200 plus more employees than we have right now. And it is in every department, and it's at all levels of city government. And it's a reflection of a national phenomenon, the great resignation and the challenge of keeping and attracting folks to all kinds of jobs in our economy right now. I said at our city council meeting last night, I don't think any of us has seen a labor market and a workplace set of issues like we're confronting right now. The national newspaper this morning said another 4.2 million people left their jobs in the last month or so nationally. So we're all trying to adjust to new ways of working, new ways of keeping, attracting workers, recognizing folks really are struggling with the unintended consequences, the second and third level consequences of COVID.
Okay, you came to government from the private sector. Have you been frustrated by bureaucracy that you've had to work through? I mention this because Kanye and I talked about the hiring process, and, you know, we know it can be slow. Another challenge to competing for talent with the business world, maybe?
It's a different environment, no doubt about it. The speed of change and adaptability between the public and private sector is different, probably intentionally so, to make sure that everybody gets a fair shake and that all of our employees are well given a good deal of consideration in hiring and retaining and promoting them. That said, I think, you know, the things you touched on earlier in the conversation about, particularly with Connie, about what does drive employee satisfaction. Back when I was in the magazine business, both at the Harvard Business Review and Fast Company magazine, one of the folks we spent a lot of time working with was Marcus Buckingham, who was working at the time for Gallup and writing books about not just compensation of employees or benefits, but also what makes for an engaged workforce. And it really often turns into the intangibles, a sense of purpose, a sense of mission, good leadership, a chance to grow on the job, and to have, as Connie said, a career track that leads to job satisfaction. And I think in public sector, I've found that the commitment to the purpose of city government, local government, is really strong. People who live and work in Santa Fe know that their local community benefits by their hard work, and they get appreciation for it beyond compensation. That doesn't mean compensation doesn't matter, but in many cases, I think we're seeing across the country with the Great Resignation that it's about more than money. It's about purpose, mission, appreciation, recognition, respect.
Okay, certainly money does matter, though. We got a tweet from Katie Stone. She says, Bill from Los Lunas is right. Many public jobs are temporary. The city of Albuquerque, for example, pays around $15 for a $10 per hour job using an out-of-state temp agency. They must be rehired after 6 months and take a 3-month leave after 2 years, and they don't get any benefits. Why do cities engage in that sort of practice, she's wondering. Can you speak to that, Mayor Weber?
Well, I can't speak to Albuquerque's practices. I can tell you that we just successfully adopted a city ordinance or city practice where there is nobody who works for the city making less than $15 an hour, and we are entering into our next classification and compensation study to deal with this issue of compaction and pay that is representative of market and competitive rates in other cities. So it's not a one and done situation when you're dealing with attracting, retaining, and promoting workers. You got to really do it across the board and keep at it. I'm always impressed by human resource professionals. One of the things I noticed in the private sector was how few CEOs or top leaders in corporate America have come up through the human resource department. It's often the finance directors or finance professionals who get promoted to the top jobs, when I think we all know that the really significant determinant of any organization is about the people. There's an old saying, the soft stuff is the hard stuff. And the soft stuff is people, and the hard stuff that we pay way at the top line of corporate America, they're focused on profitability. In the public sector, we can focus on mission and purpose and values.
Okay, well, we are going to have a human resources practitioner on in just a moment, but first I want to take a caller. We have Nick from Albuquerque on the line. Go ahead, Nick.
Hi, I just was calling in because I noticed conspicuously absent from the conversation so far has been teachers. And you guys have talked about, you know, police and corrections officers and CYFD investigators. And you're right that you're going to need a lot more of those people if you keep taking teachers for granted.
Okay, good point. Connie, I don't believe your union represents teachers. I think they have a separate union. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay,
with AFT or NEA.
Okay, Mayor Weber, we've read several times in the news that in Santa Fe there is a massive teacher shortage. What are you all doing about it?
Well, we don't. The city of Santa Fe doesn't run the school district. We are partners with the school district, and there's no doubt that when I talk to people in our community, employers as well as residents, the number one issue that we're facing is helping our kids get great educations and giving them a shot at a great future. And it starts in the family and in the home, and it also needs to be developed in the classroom. So, for example, one of the things we've done with the city of Santa Fe is to create a four-hour paid volunteer offer for any city employee who wants to go volunteer in the school district here and give volunteer time to augment and supplement what our teachers do, because it is one of the hardest jobs in America is to be in public education. I do agree we need more teachers, we need more police officers, we need more nurses. This is another thing that is a national concern. It's the burnout factor of so many of our frontline workers who've been confronted with this ongoing crisis. It's a continuing pandemic. It's not over. And so across the board, these folks, teachers, healthcare workers, firefighters, EMTs, police officers, are being asked to do things that nobody's ever been asked to do before. And we need to, again, it's about money, but it's about recognition. I would tell your listeners, if you see a cop, tell them thanks. If you send your kid to school, put a note in their lunch saying thanks for your hard work, teacher, administrator, janitor, public employee. You are doing yeoman work in unprecedented times.
Okay, I think I want to break in here and introduce our final guest this hour, Melanie Lopez. She's the manager of employment, compensation, and classification for the City of Albuquerque's Human Resources Department. Thanks for joining the show this morning, Melanie.
No, thank you for having me.
What's Albuquerque done to attract new employees?
So what we've done here at the City of Albuquerque over the last few months is we started to offer hiring incentives for some of our difficult-to-recruit positions. We have about 29 positions that are identified as difficult to recruit. Those incentives range from $750 all the way up to $15,000. $15,000 is going to be your police officer laterals that we are really trying to attract to come to the City of Albuquerque.
That's huge. That's a lot of money. Mayor Weber, is Santa Fe also offering those signing bonuses?
Yes, we've been doing that for several years now. We've got a $15,000 offer for police officers, and last night our city council approved a proposal that I made for a $2,000 retention incentive for all of our employees across the board, and a $1,000 sign-on bonus for anybody who wants to come to work for the City of Santa Fe. And as was mentioned, we have a rapid hiring event Saturday at the GCCC early in the morning. I'll be there. Bring your vaccination card and apply for a job. We'll have interviews and people can walk out the door with an offer letter if you're interested in coming to work for the City of Santa Fe. We are hiring and we are also offering $1,000 to anybody who wants to sign on right now.
Now, you just mentioned several things I'd like to talk about, but first I want to go back to Ricky Cerna. I'm wondering, is the state also offering hiring bonuses? Is that something that we're seeing in every level of government right now?
So, probably we're not. I think we're a little bit more of a Titanic to kind of to steer this ship in that direction quickly, and so it gets a little bit more difficult, as you've seen, right? The need certainly for legislative input, I think, is critical, and we want to be sure that we do things that certainly we can afford for the long haul. So what we're working on actually are some other incentives that we believe are valuable to state workers, going back to what Mayor Ellen Weber said, and that is things that really address engagement, right? Opportunities for post-secondary education attainment, opportunities for telework and remote work, understanding childcare needs and helping our workers overcome some of those things. So, and then, of course, understanding why they're leading. And we're rolling out now processes for statewide capture of reasons and rationale that our workers leave us so that we can go head on with some of those things that they disclose.
Okay, Connie, I'd like to go back to you with something. The mayor just mentioned retention bonuses in Santa Fe. And I know when we were doing our show on private sector jobs, so 6 months ago or so, we heard that there was kind of a little bit of discontent among workers who have been doing their jobs all through the pandemic, who've been working hard, who've been kind of holding things up. And then these new employees are coming in and getting these big sign-on bonuses. Are retention bonuses a good way to kind of maybe help quell that those upset employees? Or concerned employees?
Yeah. I think the way that Mayor Weber is handling it is perfect, because you would otherwise be sending this terrible mixed message that new folks come on in, we really value you, those that have been here, just keep doing the work. So I think handling it and recognizing those that have been doing work, I think, is essential. And, you know, it can get in a very difficult position if, you know, with all the signing bonuses and these larger amounts. And as Director Cerna just said, you know, can that be sustained? And will people hold out for a larger amount? Because there are those other pieces that, if we're able to articulate them of why you should come work for the city of Santa Fe, why you should come work for the state of New Mexico or city of Albuquerque, potential employees, they're going to see that, they're going to realize that, you know, because they probably may have been in the workplace for a while and they know, you know, that does matter. If I can move around, I can start here and then my goal will be such and such place. But if you are giving recruitment bonuses and not acknowledging the workers that are doing the job, you know, in some cases that could be the last straw for an employee.
You know, we're nearing the end of the show. We have a few minutes left. I want to get a couple more callers' voices on, and then we'll try to come back to Albuquerque. First, though, let's listen to Kimberly. Caller Kimberly from Albuquerque, you're on.
Hello. I'm just curious as far as how the state goes about treating their employees good. My cousin works for Santa Fe, New Mexico, for City of Santa Fe, for the state. She is responsible solely for overseeing all of probation parole for all of the various districts that come through New Mexico, all the various small cities. She gets paid under $15 an hour. She's a single mother. She doesn't get any kind of retention bonus. She has a very hard time keeping a schedule. They don't do anything to help her with her child, and they actually give her a hard time sometimes. I'm just wondering, when is she going to get $15 an hour? She deserves it.
Okay, that sounds like a rough situation. Mayor Weber, you mentioned something about $15 an hour earlier in the conversation. When does that go into effect?
That's in effect. We've boosted our minimum wage. I also think what the caller says about child care is a critical factor.
Uh-huh.
I know we're focusing on money, but when I look at the things that are in the pipeline, and it's coming from the federal government, President Biden's identified it in some of his support legislation coming down the pike. We really need to recognize when we ask why folks aren't coming back into the job market, and the mass resignation is significant among working women, child care, it turns out, is an absolutely essential variable that we need to address.
Okay. We did get an email asking if the state has any plans to raise their minimum pay to maybe match that $15. Ricky Cerna, do you have any indications that there are plans to do something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. That again, going back to you know, what we shared in legislative committee last month, I believe is the goal, one of the goals of our compensation recommendation, and that being Governor Lujan Grisham's charge for us over the last few months, is to bring that minimum rate of pay up, to work with labor to ensure that we're doing something that's meaningful and inclusive. But three is to do something that we know we can sustain, so that, you know, when times aren't as fruitful financially, right, that we're still looking at at being able to carry the number of workers that we'll have.
Okay, real quick, I didn't get back to Albuquerque, but Melanie, where can job seekers go to find information about city jobs?
So they can go to cabq.gov/jobs to view our job opportunities. We currently have a little over 100 opportunities out there. So please visit our site.
Okay, thanks. With that, we've reached the end of the hour. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts, and thanks so much to our guests. And if you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon. You can also subscribe to our podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. Our engineer today was Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez handled phones. Robert Maldonado live tweeted the conversation, and Megan Kamrick produced today's show. I'm Kaveh Movahed with Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.